tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? My beautiful people, it's Thursday. We're back. I missed y'all. It's been a hot minute. I hope everybody's staying home, staying safe, staying healthy. Welcome inside the Black Actor Studio. I'm your host, Danny Royce. And joining me today is an incredible actor. I'm a huge fan, been a fan for some time now. You've seen him in Do the Right Thing, American Gangster, Malcolm X, School Days, Poetic Justice, Chirac. The list goes on and on. You really can't talk about Black film without mentioning this guy's name. He's been recently in Self-Made, starring Octavia Spencer. You can find that on Netflix. Please welcome. The Black Actor Studio is very proud to have Roger Ginden Smith. Welcome, buddy. How are you?
Thank you, Danny. It's great to be here. Thank you for setting this up. I had hoped, of course, to have been in direct conversation with you live in the studio, but the pandemic crisis has made that impossible to do safely. And yeah. I certainly appreciate you making this happen, regardless, by any means necessary. And it's wonderful to be with you. It's a good time to have a substantial conversation about a lot of things. A lot of things have been on my mind, as I'm sure a lot of things have been on your mind as well.
Sure.
And thank you so much for bringing me to the table, brother.
Of course, my pleasure. And likewise, thank you for being here, you know, and making this work as well. Would have been great to meet you in person, but hopefully that'll happen later on, later on in the journey, right?
Yes.
So first off, I want to say congratulations on Self-Made. Incredible work. And you played Booker T. Washington, which we'll get to later on in the show. But I just want to ask you, first coming out, how was it for you when you found out you first booked this this project? And what were the steps you needed to do to get into the shoes of the character?
When I first booked it, no pun intended. Booker T. Washington has always been a fascinating man to me. And should be fascinating to anyone who's interested in American history. A distinguished gentleman who is probably most known and celebrated for establishing Tuskegee Institute, which of course educates and has educated thousands of people and sent them into service all over the world. He wrote an autobiography entitled Up From Slavery. He also wrote a biography of Frederick Douglass, another character whom I have played on stage.
Yeah.
And to be able to have this opportunity to work with the dynamic talent, which is Miss Octavia Spencer, to work with the dynamic talent, which is Miss Casey Lemons, the director of the episode that I did. Was something that I was really looking forward to and feel very blessed to have done. It's a tough story, you know, diving into history, trying to give us a sense of who Madam C.J. Walker was and what her legacy continues to be, the odds that she fought against. And certainly one of those odds that she fought against was sexism and racism as well. But Booker T. Washington comes in, you know, spoiler alert, in episode 2, and they go pretty much toe-to-toe. And the history of these two people is a lot more complicated. It's a lot larger than was indicated in the series. But Madam C.J. Walker is the hero of this series, and the hero has to have antagonists. And Booker T. Washington was certainly one of those antagonists, and I have no problem playing antagonists. I've played many memorable antagonists.
We've seen you play many of those
throughout my career.
Right.
But to be in the same room with Octavia was really a spectacular experience. And awesome. I look forward to the sequel, because certainly between these two people, there was reconciliation. They supported each other's projects. Mm-hmm. And they actually said of each other that there was no more distinguished man slash woman in the race than Booker T. Washington or Madam C.J. Walker. They said that about each other.
Wow.
And that's how the story concludes. So okay. There's definitely a sequel.
Okay, awesome. Well, we'll be looking forward to that for sure. We're going to get more into Self-Made later on in the show. I want to start off, as we do every episode inside the Black Actor Studio, at the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in Berkeley, California. But let's go before that and say where I was conceived.
Conceived, there you go.
I was conceived in Monterey, California at an NAACP convention. And wow. my mother said that she remembered the place and the position. And I said, Mom, maybe that's a little too much information.
That was hilarious.
But that's the true beginning. I'm the first generation Californian in my family. My father was from Portsmouth, Virginia. My mother from Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
And they came to California seeking the opportunity that was denied them in the Jim Crow South. And I am the beneficiary of that movement.
Hey, that's incredible. Yeah. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister, Louise, and we had a late brother, my brother Sherman, who's passed on, but who is always with me.
Yeah, of course. But I've, like I said before, I've always been a huge fan of you. Of yours for some time now. I've Mad School Days was like one of my favorite movies back in the day. We would continue to play that over and over. I mean, you've been in my household for some time now. My mom is probably watching, so shout out to Mommy.
Hi, Mom. Thank you for producing this brilliant son, who should be a little more careful about believing what he reads on the internet.
Apparently, right? But did you have any nicknames growing up?
Roger Dodger, of course. I was a Dodger fan.
Dodger fan.
And I was a Dodger fan because my father was a Dodger fan. Why was my father a Dodger fan? My father was a Dodger fan because of Jackie Robinson, number 42. Mm. He was the first.
Yes.
And that's how I became a Dodger fan.
Okay.
And of course, the Dodgers came from Brooklyn and went to LA, and you know, that was my nickname.
Okay. And so, how was the dynamics growing up? Apparently, you know, obviously, you have there's a lot of, I mean, seeing your career, there's a lot of pride of being Black and being a man of color, which I think is something that we are kind of lacking in my generation. We're getting back to that being proud and state, but I felt like it was lacking a little bit, especially before Obama, just because our skin color is considered a weapon. So what was it like, the dynamics of you growing up and really going after everything, being a man of
color? Well, you mentioned Barack Obama, who was the last president that the United States has had, who has functioned as a president.
I agree.
I took my elder daughter to celebrate her 16th birthday to the inauguration, the first inauguration of President Obama. And I went there because my late father would have loved to have been there. He worked in Washington, D.C. He went to Howard University. And I think that he would have been overwhelmed by that experience. The celebration that day was not simply a celebration of one man's achievement, one Hawaiian man by way of Eagle Rock, by way of Chicago, by way of Cambridge, by way of New York City. It was a celebration of many men and many women who struggled so hard to reach that moment. And it is particularly difficult in this moment that there are so many still among us who would try to dismantle that moment. And this is the ongoing struggle. But as Mr. Douglas said, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. That was the rap of Brother Frederick Douglass.
That's very true. Wow. So I want to get into you kind of getting the actor's bug, as you like to call it, right? When did you... Let me start off with this. What were some of the great actors, shows, TV shows and movies that you saw growing up that kind of inspired you to go into this field?
I had an opportunity as a younger man to work with a gentleman by the name of William Marshall. Oh. Now, William Marshall is perhaps most known for a so-called blaxploitation film called Blackula. Yes. William Marshall was also a distinguished stage actor, and he had a community organization called a Society for Black Heritage Drama Incorporated. And I was one of the younger members of that troupe, and we would travel all over LA, reciting poetry, doing theater. Horace Tapscott, the great jazz genius, was our musical director. So in growing up, I was very fortunate to have that kind of exposure to a gentleman who had obviously proven that he had cinematic chops in Blackula, and who brought history and a sense of gravity and truth to that role, but who also was committed to literature, was committed to music, and was committed to community service. So William Marshall, very fortunate to have grown up in his shadow.
Amazing. And so he became your mentor. So to speak.
And one of my mentors, absolutely. And so, you know, I aspire to doing a film called Son of Blackula.
Ah, nice. It's been a minute since I've seen Blackula. It's been a while.
It's been a while. So, you know, it's time for the Son of Blackula to come forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so give me some of your favorite TV shows. When you were younger?
Oh, I watched all kinds of stuff, you know, from Bonanza to Get Smart to The Monkees, Julia, of course, with the late, great Miss Diane Carroll. Yeah. I watched my Saturday morning cartoons. My mom would not let me watch Amos and Andy. Whenever I tried to turn something of that nature on, she would always say, "Oh no, no ethnic humor." But I wound up getting into my father's X-rated albums like Red Fox and Wild Man Steve Gallen, and later, of course, Richard Pryor. And that's where I first really started doing monologues, you know, memorizing all these crazy stories, all these crazy jokes. You know, my father had about 500 jokes, and he never told them in front of us, you know, but we knew that he had all of these crazy punchlines. If you look at a film called Deep Cover, which was some years back, directed by the great Bill Duke and co-starring Lawrence Fishburne and Jeff Goldblum. All I do is tell my father's jokes throughout the entire film, man. You know, so everywhere along the way, it's a tribute, really. It's a tribute to the ancestors,
of course, those
who have given to me. I try to give it back as I rip them off.
And I just want to shout out to everyone in the chat right now. People are really just, you know, saying hi and telling you're a wonderful actor.
Hey,
people love to, you know, they're someone mentioned Tales from the Hood on here.
Tales from the Hood, there you go.
And all that
Rusty
stuff.
Kind of.
Yeah. So, you know, just really getting a lot of love. I'd like to thank everybody who's tuning in right now. Also, thank you, Roger, for being here. I really appreciate this. And then thank you to Miriam Menounos and Kevin Undergaro for allowing me to continue to bring these amazing guests week in and week out, however we can, virtual, whatever, in person,
hey.
And sharing their amazing stories with you. So I really appreciate that.
You came into it right on time, Mr. James Lipton.
Hey.
Rest in peace. Rest he stepped peace. Off and he handed the mic to you. So you got to continue on.
Yes. Thank you so much for that.
Gotta continue on.
I definitely will. And so I want to talk about your first work, your very first time. You know, you're in LA or you're in California already, Berkeley. When did you make the transition, or did you transition to LA? And when that happened, how was
it? I grew up in LA. I went to undergraduate school here at Occidental College. I went to graduate school at Yale. I started Yale thinking I was going to do a PhD in history. I wound up auditioning for the Yale School of Drama. I was accepted into a wonderful class, which included Charles Dutton, Angela Bassett, and John Turturro, three people with whom I subsequently worked on screen. So that's how I made my transition, thinking that I could, make my mark as a performer, but obviously having interests in history, biography over my shoulder as a picture of a guy by the name of Huey P. Newton.
Yes.
I played Huey over 600 times on stage all over the world. And then, of course, we made a film of it directed by my longtime colleague, Mr. Spike Lee.
Yes.
And when I was doing theater at the Guthrie Theater, doing Ionesco and Shakespeare and Dickens, I went to this film called She's Gotta Have It. And I sat through it twice and I said, I gotta find this guy. Who is this guy from Brooklyn, this little guy? I gotta find him. And I got I got what's called a cattle call audition. For a film called School Days. And we've been working together ever since. We've done 10 films together.
Right. Yeah. And that was going to be my next question. So you kind of answered that for me already.
Yes.
When you and Spike Lee made that connection. So there, you have a lot of, teams in Hollywood, right? So like Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, that worked and stayed together and gel together throughout the times. Something that was really important to you and Spike's relationship that made it ever last so long?
I think that we see eye to eye culturally, politically, even though he's considerably shorter than I am, but it's still eye to eye. I noticed in She's Gotta Have It, the first original film, that Nola Darling had the same birthday as Malcolm X. There was something in that weird, trivial moment that spoke to me, because I think that my take on history is quite similar. And after we had done School Days, I knew that he was going to do another film set on a block in Brooklyn on the hottest day of the summer. And I knew that there must be something that I could do to contribute to that. So he gave me a draft of the script. The draft had a quote from Malcolm X at the beginning of the script. I knew that Malcolm resonated deeply throughout that piece. And so he said, come back next morning and pitch me an idea. Wow. So I pitched him the idea of this guy named Smiley, who stuttered, who walked up and down the street trying to sell personally colorized portraits of Malcolm X shaking hands with Martin Luther King. And at the end of the film would put the picture of Malcolm and Martin up on the wall. Now, what we didn't know was that Smiley would actually be the arsonist and would be the one who would burn the pizza parlor down.
Right, right.
Now, that was an Oscar-nominated original screenplay. But if you look in that screenplay, you will not see the character of Smiley because the character of Smiley was completely improvised. We made it up as we were going along.
That's awesome. That's incredible.
So that's the kind of intuition, the kind of connection that I've had with Spike for many, many years.
That's incredible. Just to be able to just give that back to the project, you know.
Yeah.
You guys have trust in each other as well. That's, I mean, trust is number
one. Right.
Right. So what were some of the most challenging things you come across when you first started out in the industry?
Well, I never thought that I would have a film career. I thought that my career would be limited to the stage. And again, I am very fortunate to come up in the same generation as Spike, to be able to imagine a cinematic career.
Right.
And I have always been about the business of creating my own vehicles of expression, whether they're on the screen, as I just indicated with Do the Right Thing, or whether it's on stage, where I've done any number of independent pieces where I've played Huey, I have played Rodney King, whose birthday is today, actually, where I've played Christopher Columbus, and I've played many, many people, the great ball players, Juan Marichal of the San Francisco Giants, and the great Dodger, John Roseboro, in a play called Juan and John. Most recently, I have written and played Otto Frank, who was the father of Anne Frank, the great diarist. In fact, I'm supposed to be on stage tonight, but unfortunately, that didn't happen, right? To be continued, and we're calling it a postponement and not a cancellation. So look for Otto Frank. It's really a dynamic story, I think, of a man who was the only survivor of his immediate family. He lost his wife and his two daughters, including Anne. Yeah.
So Otto Frank, and that, and where was that going to be shown?
I'm supposed to be on stage tonight at Bootleg Theater here in L.A.
Bootleg Theater.
Home theater, and then we were going to go to New Orleans, and then, you know, we're expecting to be at the Public Theater in the coming season. So knock on wood, all this stuff will happen, and we'll be coming to a theater near you.
A theater near you, right? Coming to fruition, right? Well, so I want to get, your credits are, you know, insane, right? you've been in the
I've done a lot. 100 films. I've done more than 100 films.
Now. More than 100 films, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Well, I feel very blessed to have done the work that I've done, but there's a lot more work to be done.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. I'm always looking forward.
So I want to talk about your one of your favorite moments on set, and it could be in any project, anything, but something that comes to your mind right now. What was one of your favorite moments on set?
Well, when we filmed a Huey P. Newton story in front of a live audience in a former synagogue in the Lower East Side of New York City, Huey says at one point with the audience there, "Hey, I love you." And somebody in the audience shouts out, "Hey, we love you too." And then somebody else shouted, "And we miss you." So it was, you know, that kind of magical moment that couldn't possibly have been scripted. But right. if you wanted to script it, you couldn't script it even more perfectly. But it represented for me the strange and wonderful and terrifying moment when art imitates life, imitates death.
Yeah.
And that was a particularly memorable moment, I think, for all of us who experienced that live.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely a moment that I remember forever. That's yes. incredible. So, you know, you've been in the game for a while. We've gone through some changes in Hollywood. There's still some more progress that needs to be had. Yes. I just want to get your take on how we are as a community in Hollywood, doing our things in front and behind the camera, where you see it now, and especially where do you see it going in the future, especially right after this pandemic?
Well, speaking of the pandemic, yesterday we lost a brilliant man yeah. by the name of Mr. Ellis Marsalis. Not just a great musician, not just a great teacher in New Orleans, but a great father. Mm-hmm. And his family just happened to include some brilliant musicians as well, called Winton Marsalis and Branford Marsalis and Delphio Marsalis and Jason Marsalis. And there are two other great sons, Ellis and Mboya. And I had the fantastic opportunity to see the entire family.
Wow.
Play. Last year at Jazz Fest in New Orleans. Mm. And it was obviously the last time that they would all play together. And that, my friend, was a sacred moment which spoke to the past, but it also speaks to the future. And if we as artists can devote ourselves, commit ourselves, discipline ourselves to the same degree that Mr. Marsalis has done, and did, then I think we're going to be okay. I think that if we can survive the virus of the Middle Passage, the virus of slavery, the virus of the Holocaust, we might be able to survive this thing as well.
Yeah. I feel like, I feel art always has a way to survive, right?
Always. Well, it's the only way to survive, I think.
Yeah, it is.
And oddly enough, when we're looking for budget cuts, we're the first thing that gets
first
cut.
Thing. Yes.
Yeah. I saw that Germany has committed billions of dollars for the restructuring of the arts in this crisis, because they know they recognize the necessity
yes.
of this moment. We okay. have... we have a fearless leader at present moment who hasn't even gone to the Kennedy Center since he was sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in his backyard.
Right.
But it's probably too early Pacific Coast time to go that way.
To go that way. Never too early.
let me put something else in this, Xavier.
Oh man, yeah, it's I agree that art as artists, you know, I feel like, do you feel like you have you have this right and this duty as an artist, as a Black artist, to make people you know, escape reality in a sense, especially during this time?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of options.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of what we can listen to, what we can watch right now.
Right.
And it's really interesting how we can prioritize our imaginations at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can go into some definite escape modes, or you can dig deep into some stuff that you probably should have dug into a long time ago, but you never really got around to it. You never listened to that Nina Simone track.
Right.
You know, you never read the history of Pushkin. Hmm. You never thought about Madam C.J. Walker or Booker T. Washington.
Right.
But now maybe is the time to do that. Or you can, you know, there's some great DJs online right now, and you can shake your groove thing, you know, to the break of dawn. You can do that.
Right.
You know, Cardi B had some to say about it, and you know, they're mixing her up in this thing, and you know, that's cool too. And you know, your boy The Weeknd, he's got a little thing that he's trying to say right now. So as always, we are providing multi generational and multidisciplinary statements for the world to consume. Okay? And we will continue to do so because that's what we do.
That's exactly what we do. Hell yeah. And speaking of content, so what are you binging now? Are you binging anything? You watching any shows or at the moment? Or,
you know, I started listening to this Bob Dylan track, "Murder Most Foul." It's 17 minutes long, and it's really more of a spoken, broken word rap than a song, and it's inspired by the John F. Kennedy assassination in 1963, but it covers so much. I think it's worth a listen, and I've been kind of digging into that. But I've also been listening to my Ellis Marsalis, my Branford Marsalis, and getting my Marsali on.
Yeah. Okay, well, I just want to get into Self-Made one more time as we are finishing up the interview. So, incredible project, like I was saying, I'm anticipating a two coming out. If they were to create a sequel, what's something that you would love to see happen, especially
I would love to see more of Booker T's interaction with his family. Mm-hmm. His brilliant and beautiful wife, Margaret, is in the episodes, played by my great comrade, Kimberly Huey. We need to get together. You need to see us together.
Right.
And of course, you need to see the reconciliation between Booker T. Washington and Madam C.J. Walker, because there was a beautiful reconciliation there, and they supported each other to the very end, and they both died of hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
They shared that, and that's one of the reasons why we are so, you know, vulnerable at this particular moment.
Yes.
But let me throw out a little thing. I'm on the board of LA Works, which is Los Angeles's largest volunteer organization, and I would love for folks, even if they're not in the LA area, to go to laworks.org and do some volunteering. You can do it from the privacy and the comfort and the safety of your own home. Yes. LA Works. Yeah.
laworks.org for sure. Yes. Yeah. That's incredible. So as we wrap up the interview, I have a quick segment that we like to do. It's called Fast Questions, okay? What is your favorite word?
Incohate.
What is it?
Incohate.
That's
the one I thought of.
Oh, well. How about your least favorite word?
Egress.
Egress. Okay. Wow, you got some big words there. Let me pull out my dictionary now.
Egress is just two syllables. You know, P.T. Barnum used that in the circus. Mm. He said this way to the egress, and people thought that it was some sort of display, you know, some sort of freak or something. And actually, egress, of course, just means exit. He said this way to the exit. So he's getting people out, you know, getting people out of the circus tent so that more people could come in and spend more money.
Right. Okay. At least favorite word. Okay. What is your favorite smell?
Apple pie.
Okay. And your least favorite smell?
Oh, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, wow. That is a good one. Okay. That was a good one. That threw me off. Okay. If you could trade lives with anyone right now, who would that be?
Trade lives. Wow. I don't know if I want to trade lives with anybody. I feel so blessed to have the one that I have. But if I had to trade it in, maybe Matthew Henson.
Matthew Henson.
You know, he was an Arctic explorer. You know, he was the brother who wore that big, you know, fur hat. You know,
right.
Got to the North Pole, and they tried to take the love away from him. You know, ask Taraji about it. She'll tell you about Matthew.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's an ancestor.
Okay.
But I don't think he's still up there, though. That was a century ago. that would be an interesting life. Could you imagine being up there, going to the top of the world? You know, and you didn't even have a Tesla to do it in.
Yeah, right. That part. You've worked with many people, right, in your career. Who is someone you have not worked with that you would like to?
Probably FKA Twigs.
Okay.
I think she's really brilliant because she sings, but she moves so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this cinematic vision as well.
Right.
And she's another generation, which I think is important, you know, to commit that thing.
For sure.
You know her?
I don't know her, but I'm going to...
You should. Look her up. Yeah.
I'm going to write her name down, though, so I can take a look. I definitely want to see her.
FKA Twigs.
FKA Twinks. And last
Twigs.
But not least.
Twigs. Yeah.
Oh, Twinks. Okay.
Twigs. Twigs. T-W-I-G-S.
Twigs. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Twinks. Got it. No.
Twigs.
And last but not least, you get up to God.
Huh?
Heaven's real. You get up to God. What would you like him to say to you?
What would I like her to say to me?
Yep.
So, because you're presuming that God is a male.
God, him, he.
Is gendered as a male.
Yeah, God can be whatever you want. Whatever he wants to.
No, I suppose it would be a question. Like, was it really worth it all?
That's the first time I've gotten a question response to that question. Okay. All right. There we go. I like that. Well, we got to wrap. Roger, I'd like to thank you so much for joining
me. We're just getting started. What are you talking about?
I know, right? I know.
We're on house arrest. We don't have anywhere to go.
Exactly. I would love to keep this going. Maybe we'll continue another day. But I'd like to thank you so
much. Let's do it, Danny. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Of course. And if you can tell everyone who's watching, the viewers, where to find you, where they can support, all that stuff. Social media.
Yeah, please, please catch me on Facebook, Roger Genver Smith. That's G-U-E-N-V-E-U-R. That's really a simple way of doing it. I'm always posting what I'm doing on my page. And don't forget to help those who need some help and go to laworks.org. We have an organization here in Los Angeles that's been serving the community for 30 years now. And you can be a part of it from the comfort and safety of your home.
Yes. Thank you. And everyone, please stay safe and stay healthy out there. Also, like Roger just mentioned, be sure to help your fellow man in whichever and however you can. You know, now is the time to just lend a hand. People really need a lot of things right now. You know, a lot of people are out without work, 3 million people without work. So, you know, prayers, all that helps. Thank you so much for tuning in. Roger and Vince Smith, great having you aboard. We'll see you soon. Thank you. It's your boy, Danny Royce. We'll see you next time inside the Black Actors Studio. Same place, same time next week. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Danny. Thanks for having me. And thanks, Ryan, for being a wonderful, wonderful producer.
You're welcome.
All right.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.